So welcome to the e-com growth show, where we cut through the chaos of e-com growth and show you how to build a business that scales and supports the life that you actually want. I'm your host, Brittany, former boutique owner turned growth strategist for e-com owners like yourself. And today I'm joined by co-founders of Shopanova and Bloom, Robbie Switzer and Danny Stafford. We created this podcast to pull back the curtain on what's really working to grow Shopify brands to consistent 100K plus months without burnout or guesswork. Whether you're getting traction or scaling fast, this show is designed to help you simplify, focus, and grow with purpose.
So today we are joined by Lauren Dobslaw. She is our current creative strategist in our agency. She's worked across nearly every corner of the industry, from mom and pop shops to international brands, with experience spanning from influencer management, campaign strategy, brand growth, and even as a content creator herself. She brings a 360 perspective to e-com creative. She's worked with household names like Dunkin', Crocs, YSL, Disney, Microsoft Windows, and even Barbie. Woo, woo. And countless small businesses and fast-growing startups as well. So let's go ahead and dive into it. Lauren, I love getting the tea. Okay, so first things first, how did you get in to like creative strategy, brand strategy? Like, what is your origin story? I love to know, and I would love to hear about it.
Yeah, absolutely. So I initially was going to college back in, 2015, 2016. And there was no such thing as social media marketing. Like, this was a really new industry. And at the time, it was just a bunch of words put together, like social media. And then how can a business really take advantage of that? It was very new. And I got an opportunity to work with a local influencer. I was living in Pennsylvania at the time, which looking back now was kind of crazy that there was these mega influencers. I had no idea that that existed in Lancaster, rural Pennsylvania. Yes, exactly. And I was majoring in just communications, public relations. That was about the extent that it really got into in terms of digital marketing. And I got this opportunity. I was just following along with this local influencer. I honestly thought she was based more New York, kind of area than actually as local as she was. And she had posted on her Instagram story one day that she was looking for a personal assistant. And it completely, honestly, changed the trajectory of my life. She was looking for somebody to help negotiate her own campaigns. Then also she was starting an agency. So I got to really build that with her from the ground up. I started as her personal assistant and then eventually got to a point where we were scaling and scaling, growing a team. And I was the director then of the agency before I then moved to Charleston and pivoted a little bit where I was working more on the content creation side with some local photographers and videographers and realized there was really a need there for people not just creating the content, but then what's the next step? And what do we do with that content once we receive it? So I got to step in there and kind of fill that need. And it just took off in a little bit of a different direction. But I always look back and I credit the influencer that I worked with, Summer, at the very beginning, that it really did change the trajectory for me.
That's so funny. That's like kind of like mine and Dan's, where it's like we were creating content. We were a video production company. And then it's like, what do you do with it? We went the paid ad route and you went kind of like organic growth route. So that's super cool.
Yeah, it really was. And I think that for business owners too, they don't really realize, or they didn't at least at the time, that, okay, we're hiring this production company or this photographer and we have these assets, but we don't have the strategy. We don't have that next step of, okay, what do I do with this now?
Awesome. Okay, so thank you so much for sharing your story. I love hearing stories. Fun question. So out of all the brands you've worked with a lot of big brands, you said mom and pop shops. What was something that was a bit unexpected that you learned in the process of maybe like working with a bigger brand? And if you could tell us a little bit more about it.
Yeah, absolutely. So in terms of working with a bigger brand, I think honestly that I think often we look to bigger brands to kind of set the scene or be like these trailblazers. But honestly, I think that a lot of the best lessons come from the smaller brands who are willing to take the chances that maybe a larger corporation doesn't feel like they can or they should in terms of their own brand. I remember this was actually a smaller client, but we were working with a production company to create a series of pretty polished videos that we were then going to run as ads. And at the shoot, I was also doing some more like UGC in the moment type stuff just to have more so for organic social. And the founder, while they were doing other stuff, I had pulled her aside and we were just talking and she was answering some FAQs about the new product launch. And it was very candid. And I wasn't sure really if we were going to end up using it, but we ended up running it as ads and it outperformed the content that they had paid much more money for and spent a ton more time on. And after that, I was like, oh my gosh, wow, there's so much power in this kind of content that I think a lot of people just write off.
It's so funny because little brands are trying to act like big brands and big brands are trying to act like little brands. And it's like, it's so funny. Like even big, big budget, now you see they're doing what they see working well on an organic level, like whether that's TikTok or Instagram reels, and they're doing like UGC and more just kind of like raw and authentic content. You can tell though when it's still high production and highly planned out and stuff. But yeah, that's really good. I think the smaller brands really do kind of lead the charge in terms of what actually connects well with their customers. So it's interesting that you saw that, having worked with whatever, like Barbie and Disney and Crocs. I had no idea you worked with all those big brands, by the way. That's awesome.
Yeah, it really is. And I think not only the little brands, but little creators, how often we see them just organically come on TikTok and maybe recommend a product they might have found and they're just giving a quick shout out, or it's incorporated seamlessly in their day in the life. But then it ends up selling out and it completely changes the trajectory of this company when it was just this little creator just making a fun little video. So I think there is a lot of things that we can learn at a smaller scale for the people that are willing to really put themselves out there and try, and sometimes unintentionally.
Follow-up question for you in all of this. So you're talking with a smaller brand, let's say they're doing under $100,000 a month. They want to become a much larger brand. With everything, because you've worked on, you know, small brands, big brands, everyone in between, what's some advice you might give them from like a content creation standpoint of, hey, do this, but maybe not that as much?
Yeah. Honestly, the first thing would just be volume. I think a lot of people think I have to have the right tools. I have to have the right setup. All these like check marks that we think in our heads. And I think it's more so a mindset than it is an actual tool or camera when it really comes to content creation. And a lot of people think too that it has to be like this big buildup and this production, this performance, when the best content over time we've seen is the day-to-day. Like, how can I pivot to, how can I make creating a little bit easier as I'm already living my life, as I'm already packing orders, as I'm already answering questions? Maybe I can step back and film a video about some frequent DMs that I'm getting. And really just pivot the things that you're already doing as a founder or somebody who's working day to day in the business into how can this be valuable or actionable or aspirational to people who are potentially interested in my product.
I love that. That was so good. Awesome. And I love the concept of, hey, you're already doing the work. Just film some of it and be a little bit more inclusive of your audience in your journey. And just thinking through that lens is a bit of a shift versus I need everything perfect and curated and I need my hair done and everything perfect for me to show up. And it's like, no, just show up as you are and what you're doing in your day-to-day life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
If the goal were volume, which I think a lot of people actually have their head, it's hard to wrap their head around that, like just making, you know, a post a day or more than one post a day. I think in the back of everybody's heads, they're wanting some of the metrics, they're wanting sales, they're wanting likes, they're wanting comments, they're wanting shares. And sometimes it feels like, well, if I'm just putting out way too much, like I'm not necessarily going to get that. But what's been your experience as far as like, do people are that actually like embrace that well and do a lot of volume? Are they fairly detached from the result, or are they like really monitoring those analytics very closely, or what do you think their perspective is on what they're hoping to get from that volume is?
I think that there is a middle ground between doing it with an approach of, okay, we're creating almost from a scientific approach. Like, we're not necessarily creating from an artistic perspective in terms of aesthetic, but truly to see what performs and then ideate off of it. So I think that if we're just posting into the void or testing into the void, but then failing to come back and learn lessons from that, I think that's where there's a disconnect. I think testing, but then looking back and realizing, okay, what performed here, looking at the analytics, and that, I think that's where it really goes hand in hand of like, okay, yes, we want to still be true to the brand voice, which is an aesthetic component, because we also want to still have that trust with the audience. But at the same time, it doesn't have to be super polished or super aesthetic in order to convert or really resonate with people. So I think that as long as you are testing and then having the expectation or the goal that we're going to learn from this and not just post forever and expect something to just pop off out of nowhere, mm-hmm. I think that is really the difference in mindset.
Gotcha.
That was a great question, though.
That was a really good question.
Okay, so I'm just supposed to post a lot. Okay. Well, why? What's your goal with that?
I think that's where like different content pillars, different styles of content, and all these buckets really are important, because it gives us a way to kind of systemize things. And we're like, okay, we're hitting ABC. And out of those, what performed the best? What hooks performed? How can I go back to my top performing video and then make 3 different variations and test different ways on that?
Yeah, awesome. Okay, so what would you say makes a brand stand out, creatively speaking, in 2025? What would that look like?
Good question. I almost think that it goes back to what we were saying about native feeling content. I almost feel like the best way to stand out is to almost blend in the way that the content feels really native. It feels really organic. It feels like we're recommending a product to a friend rather than just sitting and listing off ABCD features, which is kind of a hot take, because I know that there is a lot of performative marketing and there is something to be said about that. But I think that people too have become so, like, they're so able to recognize an ad in a quick scroll. It's very subconscious that the more we can blend in with the content they're already consuming, the more impactful it'll end up being than something that really stands out, per se, in a traditional way.
100%. There's some ads that get me, specifically on TikTok, where I'll be scrolling and it's like a trendy audio and just it's native to the platform. And I'll be like, oh my gosh, this is so cute. And then it'll say sponsored. And the bottom corner, I'm like, dang it, they got me. Like, and I'll be caught off guard by it versus if it looks like an ad, I'm like, oh, this is an ad. This is dumb. And I just, yeah.
I feel like you could almost just go, rather than go work with a bunch of professional UGC creators, just like go to all your friends and family. Because it's like blending in would literally be just like the average Joe.
Like, exactly.
You don't have to be an influencer. It doesn't even have to be a micro influencer. Just like get people who use your products to post about it and then run those as ads.
That's typically brands that are smaller. That's actually typically my first recommendation of like, just ask your friends and family. Like, this doesn't have to be rocket science. Like, you just need more content and more diversified people to show your stuff and just say similar messaging. So they're hitting different pockets of audiences and stuff. But yeah, that's what I typically recommend, actually.
I completely agree, because people now know influencers. They know the game. They know what it's about. So I think even when you have these mega influencers who I'm sure they're paying tens of thousands of dollars for a sponsored post, the conversion on that is nowhere near what it used to be, because people just know, they know better now.
Yeah, for sure. I saw a content creator recently. They said, when you like are talking on camera or whatever, just pretend like you're FaceTiming with someone, like a friend, to make it feel more authentic. And I was like, oh, I kind of like that. Like, so it doesn't feel curate like that synthetic, curated, in a box type thing. It feels more relational. So,
yeah, absolutely. I love that.
So what are some of the biggest mistakes, creative mistakes that you're seeing e-commerce brands make in 2025, or common ones?
I think leading too much with the product. I think there's a lot of features. It's a lot of like listing off. And I think it's more so about the lifestyle that the product provides. There was a quote that I saw that was like, people don't buy products, they buy better versions of themselves. And it really is. Like, I think people care less about the logistics. They care about the end result that they're going to get from that. I think that people get really hung up on my product as A, B, C, D, E. But as a result, what does my life look like, and what problems are solved because of that?
100%. I have a story. Just to be upfront, if he's listening, I absolutely love this client. But we were working with a protein brand, and he nerded out. And he was so passionate about the type of isolates in the protein. I learned so much about protein isolates on our coaching calls. It is astronomical. But the type of proteins and the protein shake and all these things, and that was the pillar of his branding, was all of this education and science around the protein. And I'm like, okay, what does it do for people? What is the value it provides? What's the problem that we're trying to solve in this? And a lot of our time together was spent, how can we simplify, and give a consumer first marketing message versus a product first marketing message? So 100% agree with you there.
Yeah, it honestly is crazy. I was in a marketing class years and years ago, and I remember vividly because it changed my perspective. And they were showing a picture of like this jet. It was a mock ad for airline. And it was like saying all these different features of the jet, and it's this and that. And then the other comparison was this couple on the beach in Hawaii with the sunset. It's like, people don't care about the features of the jet. They care about being on the beach in Hawaii. And that's the ultimate thing that you really are selling, not the actual line items of the jet and this and that.
This jet has adjustable seats. I do not care. I just want to get to Hawaii with my Mai Tai. Yeah,
exactly.
Awesome. Another question, when it comes to brand voice, I feel like that's like a hot topic people ask a lot of questions about, and then there's not a lot of clarity around. So you work in so many different industries. How do you help brands, specifically e-com brands, find their unique voice amongst the noise? And then just to kind of add on to that, like, we're working with a lot of boutiques, right? And it's like, oh, there's so many other boutiques, there's so many other coffee companies or supplement companies. So how do you help them break the noise, especially when there's like all this competition? Like, anybody can just open up an e-com store these days, you know? So how do you kind of guide people through that?
I think, first of all, it's not as much what you feel like your brand voice should be or what your brand should feel like. I think a lot of the times people think, okay, I am a luxury clothing boutique. This is the way that I should talk. This is the way that I should present myself and my brand. And ultimately, your brand and your brand voice specifically is not so much what you say about your product. It's how people talk about you and what your customers are saying about you whenever they're telling a friend about your product. So I think that really diving deep into customer target personas, existing customers, a lot of things that I like to do whenever I'm doing any sort of brand research or I'm trying to find those differentiators is going on Google reviews or any place, Shopify, where they might have different sets of testimonials from past customers, and looking for commonalities, little keywords of what people have said, and from their perspective, the way they are really perceiving the brand and what they're seeing as unique attributes, and really using that as a starting point of how people are perceiving the brand rather than what we think we should be perceived as.
I love that. We have a client right now, and it's two sisters. I know Lauren and I have been working with them, and Dixie as well, one of our coaches. It's two sisters, and they have a more luxury boutique brand.
But their dynamic together is like hilarious. Like they're so funny when they show up in content together. And it's like you can be both and. You can enjoy a luxury, high quality product and you can have a sense of humor. Like you can bring that to the table as well. And that's kind of part of your uniqueness. With the reviews too, I worked with a client before and they weren't sure, like, what's your secrets? Like, they weren't sure, like, what's my secret sauce? What's my brand voice? What's our positioning really? And looked at their reviews, like you said, their jean fitting was actually the most common thing in their reviews. They were really good at helping women fit jeans. And once they converted that to like an online platform and an online experience, like that was the game changer for their business. But that was found in their reviews. Yeah. But at the same time, when you're so close to it, you can't see it. So you need to kind of like pause yourself, step out of your own business for a hot sec, and kind of evaluate yourself as a third party versus being so in your business and not being able to see what's right in front of you.
100%.
Awesome. Okay, so I like to keep things simple around here, right? We're all about keeping things a little bit more simple. What is something that's super simple that a brand could do starting this week to just start improving their...
Yeah, I think the first thing I would do is the volume. You have to have things to work with if you're trying to make new creative assets. So going back to filming little things in the day-to-day, compiling them. If you have somebody who is working with you and might be creating ads for you or helping you with social media, iCloud shared albums are really great as a way just to drop from your camera roll. It's kind of mindless. And then that way it's all in one spot. Or if you're doing it yourself, creating camera roll albums that might say fall B-roll. And then I can just drop immediately in there as soon as I take a video. So then whenever I go back to create a video that I have in mind, I can just already reference the album that I've created and have clips ready to go rather than scrolling through. For me, it's probably 50,000 photos and videos in my camera roll. So that would be the first thing. And then the second would be if you have ran any sort of ads in the past, going back and seeing what has performed well, what has it, and then what can we take away from that, I think is a lesson that sometimes people overlook because we're so on to the next thing and the next season and the next holiday that we forget to go back and look and see, okay, what can we learn from Labor Day sales? Now we're going into Black Friday, Cyber Monday. What were some hooks or some angles that worked really well that we can repurpose when it comes time for those bigger sales?
Awesome. And then how often do you encourage brands to look at their analytics, like review their own social media content or look at their Instagram analytics? I have some clients that are looking at like every hour, every day, every week. So what's like a good cadence for that?
Yeah, absolutely. So in terms of organic social, I think it can get a little bit obsessive sometimes when we're like refreshing, right? How many likes? And oftentimes something will post and then I've seen it so frequently that a week or two later, a month later, something will pop off. And whenever the video was initially posted, maybe it didn't do well and even thought about deleting it. And then here we are with all these views. So I would never write off any organic content. Let it ride. You never know. Try not to get too hung up in the details or the analytics immediately. When it comes to ads on the agency side, we wait for 30 days of performance unless it was turned off prior to that. Then we report on the data that we do have. But I think giving it enough time to test and then being able to go back. And if it's a sale, we can obviously do so quicker because there's a shorter time frame that it's live. But I think that would be a good time to go back through Labor Day and maybe even looking at your Black Friday, Cyber Monday sales from last year and seeing what kind of products performed and what kind of creative performed. So then that way you can start prepping that content now. So it's not week of Thanksgiving and we're like, oh my gosh, we need Black Friday ads. What are we going to use? I think the more you can prep ahead of time, the better.
Awesome. And that was such a good advice, by the way. Okay, switching gears a little bit. Influencer partnerships. So I know you have a strong background in influencer marketing. You are an influencer yourself. So when do you think a small business should start thinking
about influencer partnerships? Like, what does that look like for you?
I think that the idea of influencer partnerships has changed a lot since 2017, 2018, whenever I was first working in that industry. Now, I think it's honestly, as soon as you have happy customers that are willing to give testimonials, create content for you, the idea of it being this Kim Kardashian mega influencer is kind of outdated at this point, to be totally transparent. And the true influencers are people in your community, whether that's online or locally, that are brand advocates for you, are your most loyal customers, and have raving things to say and lots of friends to share them with.
Awesome. When people are looking at like influencer, is there like an audience range that you recommend? If they have 3,000 followers, I feel like a lot of brands I'm working with, they're like, oh, well, they need at least 10,000 followers, or, oh, this is a micro influencer. So like, how do you guide people through that process?
I think it's honestly all relative. There can be somebody who has 25,000 followers, but they're more of a lifestyle creator. And say your business is a CPG brand that is organic, non-GMO, vegan, all the things. Working with a creator who has 25,000 followers, the percentage of their audience that actually is interested in that kind of product is an unknown variable. Working with somebody who might be a niche, micro, nano influencer who might have 2,000 followers even, I know it sounds crazy, but if they have a page dedicated to organic, family-friendly recipes, if it's a kid's product, finding those specific niches where there's a bigger overlap of your target audience and theirs is going to be so much more impactful than these bigger, mega, more lifestyle influencers.
For sure. I love that. And then one last question to wrap up, unless Robbie, do you have any questions before I...
I did have a funny one kind of, but if you had to only do static images for the rest of your life, or video, which one would you do?
What would perform best, or what would I prefer to create? That is a bigger question.
Well, yeah, I guess that is probably a better question. Do one or the other perform way better consistently?
I think video has been performing really, really well, especially for clients that have a product that needs to be seen in action. If there needs to be some sort of demo, or if I'm not going to get really why I need your product, how I use your product in a quick scroll through a static image, then video is really a great asset. And there's some clients where we do almost majority, if not exclusively, video for because of that. But I will say that with the increase in AI tools, I feel like every day there is a new AI tool coming out when it comes to image generation, even video now with the VEO3. I think that there's a lot more variety that we can do in terms of image generation with a quicker turnaround than expecting a client to get a photographer in and take studio shots or lifestyle imagery. So I think there's a lot of potential for static, but as of this current moment, I would say video.
Yeah, we go back, and as far as our own performance, sometimes image ads do better, but I know for a lot of people, it kind of goes back and forth.
Yeah, I think it definitely depends on the product and then also the type of ad that you're trying to run. I think there's a time and place for both. But overall, what I've seen most recently, if I had to pick, I would choose video.
Yeah, epic.
I've also seen in ad accounts, like seasonally. So when I'm just starting out with like consumable good brands specifically, their static image, more educational based ads tend to perform better when we just get started, but then that timeline kind of expires around 3 to 6 months. And then it's, okay, how can we show the product? How can we incorporate video? But I've seen that kind of ebb and flow myself between from an ad account only. But when it comes to organic, video really is the best thing to do. And then carousels can perform well depending on your account too. And storytelling in carousels more specifically.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, absolutely. I second that wholeheartedly.
I love it. Okay, so final question. If someone wants to level up their creative and they don't know where to start, what might be their best next step?
I think it goes back to getting in the habit of just creating content. I think that the more you have, the more you can work with, and not thinking of it as this big to-do that I could set aside time for. It really is manageable to do in the day-to-day. And I think that we put a lot of pressure on ourselves and the way we're perceived and the way that our business is perceived. But the people who are viewing your content a lot of the times might be coming across your brand for the first time, and just using it as more so an opportunity than something I have to do. And that little bit of a mindset shift and a little bit of gratitude, I think, goes a long way when it comes to just putting yourself out there and being really excited to share your brand in new and creative ways.
Love it. Well, Lauren, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast today. We absolutely love having you on the team, and thank you so much for your time. It has been an absolute joy and pleasure talking with you.
Thank you. The pleasure is all mine. Thank you guys so much.
Thanks for tuning in to the Ecom Growth Show, where clarity replaces chaos and strategy fuels freedom. If today's episode sparked any idea or gave you a clear next step, we'd love for you to subscribe, share it with a fellow brand owner, and leave a review so more entrepreneurs can grow with intention, not overwhelm. For more resources and real talk on scaling your Shopify brand the smart way, follow us on Instagram @ShopNova. Until next time, keep growing with purpose.